Hello and welcome to another edition of Culture Shots. My name is Owen Drynan. Coming up on the show, Hailu Netsianwa interviews TD and teacher Eoin O'Riordan about access to education in Ireland, particularly for the children of non-EU nationals. We have music from Mayor Hawthorne and Richie Havens. Now here's Mayor Hawthorne with A Long Time. That was Mayor Hawthorne with A Long Time. Now here's Hailu Netsianwa interviews TD and teacher Eoin O'Riordan about access to education in Ireland.
Good morning, Eoin.
Morning.
Thank you very much for coming in. We're delighted to be the first thing on your agenda, 9 o'clock on a Monday morning as a community radio station, so it's much appreciated to have you here.
Well, it's great to be here.
Did you cycle in?
No, I didn't, I'm ashamed to say. I drove in this morning, so it's a little wet. I only got my driver's license last year, so I'm still trying to perfect the art of driving. But I did do a spinning class this morning, so I did do some cycling.
Oh yeah, fair enough. I'm going to interview just a few questions about education and its importance in society as a whole. And I'm aware that's one of your earlier experiences in life. It politicized you because of the way the education setting was.
Yeah, I became a teacher about 12 years ago. I got a job in a place called Sher Street in the north inner city, and I suppose very early on I saw the difference between the school in which I was teaching and the school that I went to myself. I'm originally from Malahide, and I suppose the resources we would have had in my own school and the things that were taken for granted that the school I was teaching in, you know, didn't have. And also the fact that the children were just so bright and so able and had so many skills, but didn't achieve as well as other kids from other areas. And there was no reason for that, proper reason for that, except maybe for the expectation levels that society have for them, or for the fact that the school wasn't as well resourced as it should be. So there comes a stage where you can only achieve so much within the classroom. And I was, you know, I was enjoying my job. I was great staff. I, you know, seemed to get on well with everybody. But there was a growing realization that outside the classroom was where a lot of the problems were, and that's where politics would step in to try and solve some of those problems.
Great. Yeah, that is a just cause for concern. I'd have a similar kind of consciousness. I came from Zimbabwe and I was in a private school I did my junior cert in a private fee-paying school. And then I ended up in O'Connell's for my leaving cert, which is not too far from Sheriff Street.
Just around the corner, yeah.
Yeah, just around the corner. And
well, I think, yeah, the important thing is that I suppose as a society, maybe we don't value education. We say that we do, but in terms of political priorities for, you know, when people go to the polling booth, they rarely vote in terms of education. They vote in terms of economics. They vote in terms of tax or pay or the money that's going to be in their pocket. They don't necessarily look long term and say a party that prioritises education is the one that I'm going to support. But there's plenty of things outside of the classroom and outside of the school structure. It's not just about class sizes or teacher resources. It's also about the way that we construct our society, our housing policy, how we tackle the drugs crisis, you know, the social welfare system, access to the labour market and employment, that sort of thing. All those things have a huge impact on somebody's sense of themselves and how they feel they can achieve and how their children will feel they can achieve. So it's a lot to take on, and you know, you only have one chance at childhood, so we have to do our absolute best that our children have the opportunity to achieve.
I couldn't agree with you more. In Zimbabwe, where I come from, it was about educating people to be on par with the system, because we were, well, I suppose compared to Ireland, we've only had about 31 years of independence. For example, the literacy rate would be about 94%. I think Poland would be the only European country that's above. I understand what you're saying. And
well, literacy is a huge problem that we have here, but ours have been assumed to be very high. But the PISA results there recently showed that we had slipped from 4th to 17th in the OECD, and that was a major cause for concern. And in a disadvantaged context, you know, 3 out of every 10 children that leave a disadvantaged primary school have fundamental reading problems. And 23% of our adult population are functionally illiterate, which means they can't read, you know, instructions or you know,
fill out forms,
that sort of thing. And that's a major challenge. And people don't like to hear statistics like that. People like to think, no, we are a modern European democracy. They don't like to be reminded that we have fundamental things wrong in our education system, like literacy problems. Teachers don't like to hear it. Sometimes teacher unions don't like to hear it, because they feel that if you're tackling this, you're placing blame. And I think we have to face up to it. If you don't have the fundamental ability to read, well, then you can't play as full and an active role in society as maybe you would otherwise. So it's something that I've always focused on from my earliest days in the council. And now, thankfully, the Labour Party and government with Fine Gael are rolling out our literacy strategy, which isn't the easy thing to do, because you do make value judgments. I mean, there's things in the budget that we had to cut in order to make sure that the literacy strategy went ahead. And there are value judgments you make, and you have to try and stand over them and push it through. And hopefully, if we're successful, that our statistics will prove that we were right. But that's one of the challenges of being in politics.
It is a really important issue.
See, there's more people staying in school now than ever before. If you look at the area in which I taught, and traditionally many people would have left school at 14, they would have gotten, you know, jobs or whatever. And now that's all changed. People are staying in school until they're 18. The applied leaving cert has helped in that now. That's a positive. And we did have, and we have now, a problem with young people who left school at 16 to go onto construction sites to get easy money, who are now unemployed and now, are facing into, you know, a lifetime of despair in many ways if they can't get themselves retrained and reskilled. So I think it's a challenge for the education system. I think it's far too easy for us to say, you know, we have a wonderful teachers and fantastic schools, and, you know, we're the land of the saints and scholars, and we always value education, when the stats don't necessarily back it up. And if you look at the money and where we spend the money, and this again is something that people don't like to hear, that 77% of the education budget is on pay, and 92% of the primary school budget is on pay. Now, that's a high percentage to be spent on pay. So if you're making adjustments and you don't make it in terms of pay, because you want to keep teachers happy, happy teachers, happy classrooms, happy kids, you've a very, very little amount to play around with. You've basically got 23% of the budget. So that's a balancing act that is becoming more and more difficult.
Yeah.
But the reason why we're in government to come down the side of empowering children.
But I think one of the big hindrances is the class system.
When you say the class system, as in inequalities within education?
Yeah, the inequalities, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we have a very proud history, but we also have, since independence as a nation, incarcerated more people per head of population than I think anywhere else in the Western world. We don't like difference in Ireland. I was at an integration centre, the annual report there late last year, and Fintan O'Toole made that remark that we've always incarcerated difference. We don't like, you know, in terms of the 26 counties of Ireland, mm-hmm. we've had a difficult relationship with people of different religious background. We've had difficulties with the traveller community. We couldn't get our head around the fact that people might have different sexual orientation for a long time. Even now, any suggestion that there be a change in the relationship between church and state gets some people very, very excited. And during the 40s and 50s, what we did was, you know, young people who were seen to be troublesome or seen to be wayward or, you know, whose family situations were insecure, we put them into institutions and we let the church run those institutions. So we've had a very, very poor record and poor history in this country of accepting difference, of allowing people to be different and to live different sorts of lives, and that is still reflected in our education system, where 92% of the schools in Ireland, primary schools in Ireland, are under religious patronage. That's our Catholic patronage, and the vast bulk of them are under religious patronage. Now, how do you stand over a system which says that, you know, 92% of them are under Catholic ethos, when 92% of the population, you know, don't share that ethos. How do you, where do, you know, young gay people fit into that system? Where do, you know, where do gay teachers fit into that system? Where do unmarried parents fit into that system? How do you create an Ireland where the, you know, the Republic, as which I believe in, is blind to all these things, is completely neutral when it comes to issues of you know, racial background or sexual orientation or faith or faith formation. And we haven't managed to crack that nut. But I mean, I think you have to do it. If you're going to try and bring about change, you can be radical and cause a lot of rows, or you can try to do it incrementally and try to empower people as you go along, which is much more, a much longer way of doing it, but it's probably it's more successful way of doing it. I'm very impatient. Sometimes I say things which irritate people. I have to, and people like me have to be mindful of other people's points of view.
Indeed.
Not to be intolerant of what you perceive to be intolerance. You know,
exactly.
And you know, there's very different ways of cracking these nuts. You know,
yeah,
but in terms of I mean, if you look even at our secondary school system, you know, we do have a lot of work to do on our enrollment policies, because there have been situations in secondary schools where somebody from a particular background with you know, particular address or a particular special education needs can be told by the principal, well, we can't really cater for you, and they can use the enrollment the admission policy in order to manipulate that. And private fee paying schools have a reputation for doing that. So we have to make sure that if the state is putting up the money for children to be educated and young people to be educated, that people are educated in a setting where, you know, they see difference around them.
True.
That the school is reflective of the community and the society in which they live. Because keeping boys away from girls and Protestants away from Catholics, away from Muslims or whatever, or pretending that homosexuality doesn't exist because it's under, you know, Catholic patronage.
Yeah.
It's just so unreal.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's many challenges.
Yeah, it's nonsensical. That's why I had to ask about that.
Well, there's other challenges as well. I mean, there's something I'm taking on now at the primary school level, where trainee primary school teachers have to have a C or higher in higher level Irish.
Okay.
Now, that is, to my mind, a barrier for some people from a disadvantaged background or from you know, coming from outside who want to get involved in teaching. It seems to me to be something that's keeping a lot of young people from disadvantaged background out of teaching, purely because they don't have the access to going to the Gaeltachts, don't have the access to grinds necessarily. And what I'm trying to work around is that maybe some of the teaching colleges might find a mechanism for getting young people who are bright, who really want to be teachers, into the training colleges and to work on their Irish while they're there, rather than making it an entry requirement, to try and break down some of the cultural barriers within education. Because if you're a young person from a particular background and you're looking at a teacher who is completely different to you, then it's going to be very difficult for you to break outside of the mindset that education, you know, we belong there.
Yeah.
You know? And until we break down those things, we're still going to have these problems of educational disadvantage. In Scotland, they talk about, you know, the total eradication of illiteracy. They really pull up, you know, high bars of achievement. In Ireland, we talk about tackling it. I think we need to be a bit more bold and a bit more ambitious as to what we're trying to achieve.
True. Personally, I'm going to learn Irish and bring it back, you know, through music and stuff. I love Irish, you know, because it's a conscious language. The little that I've sort of investigated and learned when I had the opportunity.
Well, there's a balance to be struck between when you require somebody to have something and when there's a compulsion to do something, rather than when you maybe empower or encourage. And I think maybe in the teaching of the Irish language, I think perhaps we've tilted the balance the wrong way. If you're learning Irish for 14 years and still can't string two sentences together, then something is wrong. Irish children learn it from, you know, age 4 to 18, and yet many people can, but many people can't speak it. So language acquisition is something that we haven't really achieved very well in our education system, and not just Irish but modern languages as well. Irish obviously is a modern language, but modern European languages such as French, German, Spanish, Italian, and that's going to be a real challenge for us in the future, because as trying to build our economy and all the rest of it, and export-led growth and, you know, new trading opportunities, and people talk about the BRIC countries, you know, we're going to have to realise that, yes, being an English-speaking country has its benefits, but also we have to have, you know, proficiencies in other languages.
True, true. But yeah, on that front, actually, this is another thing. I think Ireland has the world, you know, so it's... But it's a huge issue amongst a lot of migrant or people with a migrant background, you know, like even the generations coming up. It's all policy related, and what ends up happening is that there's this thing of if you weren't born in Ireland, you have to pay these, and if you're not from the EU, you have to pay these
exorbitant fees,
crazy fees, That's one crazy thing. It's a major issue for a lot of people.
And there's a major problem in the funding at third level, because I mean the Hunt report said that there's a 500 million gap in the funding at third level, and there's a clamouring of academics who are, you know, demanding that the third level fees be brought back right across the board. But you know, we want to have a city where it's, you know, theming with people who are learning. That's a young and a vibrant city. People cycling around, books under their arms, sitting under trees, talking about the way of the world. That's what we want to encourage, and you know, people from different backgrounds who might come here to learn and might then stay here to live. That's what we want to encourage. So if there's barriers to that, be it fees or housing or whatever. We certainly have to examine that and make sure that there's no barriers to those who want to come to study here, and to enrich the university life of this city. I mean, I love Dublin. I think Dublin is one of the best cities in the world, but it has so much to offer. But maybe we haven't just managed to tap into it as much as tap into, you know, our potential as much as potentially we should have.
Most definitely.
But I think even politically. And this is why I would support the idea of having a directly elected mayor. I think politically we need to have a figurehead for Dublin. I think politically we need to have one person who would drive all these things. So you can singularly identify as being the person who is, you know, thoroughly focused on Dublin City. And I hope to be in a position to support that if it ever comes before government, because it's something we miss, an identifiable person who can become an international figure to encourage people to come to Dublin, to be the figurehead of Dublin, to be there when jobs are announced, to be there when, you know, a great sporting event happens, and not just this, you know, this annual turnover of a largely ceremonial mayor who, many people take a long time to realise who they are, and before the, you know, by the time they're gone again. So there's many things we can do to politically, socially, educationally, to improve the life of this city, and, you know, a hustling and bustling and vibrant capital city is good for the entire country.
I think a lot of young people would want that too, because it's like, if you want to change, it has to start at a community level, you know.
I think the problem with local, I mean, the fundamental reform that's needed in politics in Ireland, people say we need less TDs, grand, that's fine. Can do that. We get rid of the Shannon, fine, we can do that. But that won't fundamentally change the way that politics is structured. The fundamental problem at all is that the executive has all the power. The whip system, to my mind, is too strong. The whip system.
Okay.
Whereas every party member votes with the party, and there's no wriggle room on the floor of the parliament, at least, for debate. And I think that's isn't necessarily healthy. If you look at the British system, where now there's a huge, you know, disparity in the number of representatives, but in the British system, you know, you have regularly enough Labour MPs who vote against their party line, Conservative MPs who do the same. You know, now and again the government loses a vote, and you know, it's not the end of the world. Where in the Irish context, if you're seen to vote against your party, you're automatically thrown out. If the government loses a vote, it's almost seen as the end of the government. We have a very sort of almost on the edge disaster sort of view of any sort of political, you know, divergence.
Mm.
In the real reform that's needed, though, is at local government level, where the local representatives. I think there's far too many councillors. I think there's definitely far too many councils. I don't see a reason for town councils. I think their time has gone.
Mm-hmm.
I think in terms of county councils, I think possibly we could reduce the number of councillors that we have. But I think they should all be full time. They should be full time. They should be paid properly, and they should be accountable, and they should have powers to raise money and then to spend it.
Mm.
Because currently what happens is your local councillor can take the can say if something goes right in their community, you can say, well, you know, that was because of my good work. And something goes wrong, they can blame the unelected manager, and that's not fair.
Yeah.
It's not just, and it's not good for democracy. People need to see, as you say, at the community level, that the local representative for their little local council ward is somebody who is full time and is taking responsibility. If you're not taking responsibility for the revenue that you raise and how you spend it, well, then you're not really a politician.
True.
You know, so and having that reform where it's the elected members who drive the waste policy, it's the elected members who drive the planning policy, the energy policy, the housing policy, and you know, you have an overarching mayor who, you know, has the executive power to carry this stuff out. That's the key to fundamental reform of the way politics works in Ireland. And you know, I'd be very disappointed if we didn't manage to address a lot of those issues during our time in government.
Thank you very much for coming in. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Anytime. Sure, maybe we'll do it again.
Most definitely, yeah.
Now for some more music, let's hear Richie Havens' Going Back to My Roots. Thanks for listening, and thank you to our special guest, Eoin O'Riordan TD, and to you for listening. This is Owen Droynan. Tune in every week, Mondays from 6:30 to 7 on Near FM. To listen back to past episodes, simply log on to www.nearpodcast.org.
The content and views expressed in this programme are those of the participants alone and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of Pubble, the Office for the Promotion of Migrant Integration, or the European Commission.
This project is co-financed by the European Commission under the European Integration Fund and is supported by the Office for the Promotion of Migrant Integration in the Department of Justice and Equality and Pubble.